Hello and welcome to a very special episode of Left, Right and Center. I'm Vishnu Shom. We are coming to you from Bari in southeast Italy. The Prime Minister is on his way now to Italy to attend the G7 summit. It's his first international visit after being sworn in for a record time as the Prime Minister. The G7 is very important for India. It began as an economic grouping over a period of time. India's economy has grown. We are now the world's fifth largest economy, larger than the host nation Italy, Canada and also France. What's the Prime Minister's agenda this time around? We've got very special interviews with the Indian ambassador in Rome, also with Ian Bremmer, the well-known analyst. We bring you all the details of G7. Tomorrow is going to be a key day, particularly with bilaterals between India and Italy, and also a possible meeting between the Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and Prime Minister Modi. Prime Minister Narendra Modi departing New Delhi, his first international visit since he was sworn in for a third time. Mr. Modi is headed to Apulia in southern Italy as a special invitee at the G7 meeting, a gathering of the most powerful leaders in the planet. It's going to be a brief visit. Mr. Modi is here for just 24 hours. An aspect reflected perhaps in the size of his interaction with the diaspora here. Unlike massive events in stadiums, there will be a 5-minute meet and greet here in Italy. I'm in Bari, a full 50 kilometers away from Borgo Egnazia. That is where the all-important summit of the G7 is taking place. The reason we've been unable to go over there is because that entire area is off limits for the media. It's been turned into an absolute fortress. But behind that fortress are important conversations which are taking place, not least of all, on the future of Ukraine. The US President Joe Biden landing in Italy. His key agenda ahead of a World Peace Summit on Ukraine being held in Switzerland is clear. Arrive at an agreement that sends Russia a strong signal. A $50 billion package to Kyiv, financed through seized Russian assets.
We want to demonstrate that the U.S. supports the people of Ukraine, that we stand with them, and that we'll continue to help address their security needs. The agreement will show our resolve and continued commitment.
It's unclear at this stage if Prime Minister Modi will be drawn into the conversation on Ukraine, and it remains unlikely that he'll attend the Ukraine Peace Summit, though India will be well represented. Here in Italy, though, India does have a key role to play as a leader of the Global South. India has been invited to the G7 repeatedly. It's the 11th time India is participating in the meet, whose key players represent close to 45% of the global GDP and more than 10% of the world's population. Significantly, China is not a member, and Russia was ejected in 2014 following their invasion of Crimea in Ukraine. While the initial agenda of the G7 was on economic issues, talks between the most powerful economies in the world, the overall agenda has changed over a period of time, and that's because the state of the world's economy has changed. For example, India is now the world's fifth largest economy. We are, in fact, larger as an economy than the host nation Italy, France and also Canada. And India is seen to be an important voice of the global south, which is why India's participation, representation over here is seen to be crucial. Besides key bilateral meetings, including the possibility of one with his Canadian counterpart Justin Trudeau, at a time of great tension between India and Canada over Khalistani separatism, Mr. Modi will be focusing on the Indo-Pacific region, Africa, climate change, migration and artificial intelligence. He will, of course, also look at the relationship with Italy, a key partner nation with whom New Delhi has had excellent relations. The Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni was in India for the G20 summit in October 2021 and was in India on a state visit in March last year. Both countries are developing their strategic partnership. There are 2 lakh people of Indian origin in Italy, the second highest in the EU after the Netherlands. Italy is a member of the India-led International Solar Alliance. Trade in 2022-2023 was $15 billion. Italy is India's fourth largest partner in the European Union. India has an investment of $400 million in Italy in pharma, IT, electronics manufacturing and engineering.
The G7 is an important platform because it has as members the most important and industrialized countries in the world, and some of our key global partners.
Mm-hmm.
And for the Prime Minister, it's an occasion to reiterate the importance we attach to multilateralism. It's a platform on which he will espouse his vision of Vasudeva Kutumbakam, and also follow up on some of the outcomes of the G20 summit that he had chaired last year. And obviously, we are also voicing the aspirations and expectations of the Global South on this platform.
There's also a profound historic association in the relationship that's often forgotten. Close to 50,000 Indian soldiers fought for the liberation of Italy during the Second World War. They fought in some of the most important battles here, in Florence, Bologna and Monte Cassino. In parts of Italy, Indian soldiers are still remembered and honored.
The Prime Minister's visit to Italy at this time, within days of being sworn in for a record third time as Prime Minister, sets the stage for his foreign policy agenda. India, as we've been repeatedly saying, is an important voice of the Global South. We've had an outstanding G20 as well. Over here, there is an impetus being added to the India story. Important conversations. Remember, India is also essentially non-aligned. That word is no longer as fashionable, perhaps, as it once was. But India is not associated with any one power bloc, which in a sense adds to the respect that India earns around the world as an even player, an equal player, which deals with the major powers in an equal way. With camera person Rakesh Singh, Vishnu Shom in Bari for NDTV. Ukraine is going to be a key focus in this G7 meet. Will Prime Minister Narendra Modi be called to look at the Ukraine issue? India, remember, has extremely strong ties with both Russia and with Ukraine. What are the other key areas that are important for India as far as G7 is concerned? I spoke to the well-known analyst Ian Bremmer earlier on in the day. With all the G7 leaders now present in Italy, the 2024 summit is well and truly underway. India is a special invitee. The Prime Minister will be over here later tonight. Joining us now to talk about the significance of G7 and India's growing role as well, Ian Bremmer. Ian, thank you very much for being with us. How is the Ukraine crisis center as far as G7 this year is concerned?
Oh, it's utterly dominant in this year's meeting. You have the 75th anniversary of NATO coming up in Washington, and everyone wants to make sure that that does not lead to an erosion or a fragmentation of the commitment of NATO to Ukraine. The war has not been going as well for the Ukrainians recently, and there is grave concern, both in terms of European elections in France, that if in the next few weeks Le Pen's party wins, you will see an end of consolidated support for Ukraine from Europe. And of course, if Trump wins in the U.S. in November, you'll see an end of consolidated support for Ukraine in the United States. So the urgency of providing greater support from the G7 for Ukraine, precisely because time may be running out, the window may be closing, I think that is absolutely job one for the attendees of all G7 countries in this summit. Singularly important.
The U.S. is trying to push through $50 billion in assistance for Ukraine on the basis of assets which have been seized from Russia. How important, again, is this in sort of making the situation in Ukraine viable, as it were? As you mentioned, they've been taking some pretty heavy losses of late.
Well, they have been turning that around in the last couple of weeks. I would say the Russian offensive towards Kharkiv has been stalled. In part, that's because the Ukrainians have mobilized more troops. They're getting them to the front line. And at least as important was the additional amount of defense support after months of delay that came from the United States. That, plus the Europeans are doing more, has actually made a difference. I wouldn't say the Ukrainians are winning, but they've slowed the gains by the Russians significantly. Having said that, everyone is concerned about what this means, not just for the next few months, but for the next year or more. How might you get to a position where the Russians understand that they have to start negotiating, that it's fruitless for them to continue an offensive, that they'll be able to gain more territory? They might be able to overturn the Ukrainian government, which is in Russia's interest. The best way to do that is to show the Russians that there's going to be consistent commitment for Ukraine not just for the next few months, but for years and years. And that's been a big piece of the reason why they want to take these billions and billions of dollars that have been frozen, Russian assets, sovereign assets by the Americans, the Europeans, the Japanese. They want to use that money and the collateral on that money. They want to use interest on that money to provide defense support for Ukraine. A few months ago, the Europeans were saying no way that's going to happen. As the Ukrainians started doing worse, as people started panicking more, now they're moving in that direction. I don't think you'll have a full agreement on this at this G7, but we're very close. At this point, I expect that's going to happen in the coming weeks.
There's also an important peace summit being held in Lucerne in Switzerland within the next couple of days. Is there a serious expectation now that Russia may be inclined to get into some sort of a peace agreement? Is Ukraine ready to get into some sort of peace agreement? I ask this because every second day we continue to see all sorts of threats, the nuclear threat from Russia and Putin once again. They clearly aren't giving up the fighting or going easy on the fighting despite the incredible losses that they've sustained.
Look, right now the reality is this war is continuing to escalate. The Russians are targeting cities in Ukraine. They're targeting civilians. The damage is severe. The Ukrainians are short on air defense. That's a problem for them. Meanwhile, the Ukrainians now have official support from NATO countries to use their weapons to target the Russians inside parts of Russia itself. You also know that soon there's going to be an announcement that NATO countries will provide boots on the ground to train Ukrainian forces, yet another piece of escalation. And in response, we see the Russians engaging in significant cyber attacks against the critical infrastructure in the U.S. and NATO, something that was a red line for President Biden 3 years ago before the invasion into Ukraine had commenced. So, I mean, look, the backdrop here is this is getting worse. And we can talk about negotiations. The reality is the Russians aren't participating and they have no intention of participating, certainly not at a minimum until they see how the U.S. election goes, because they believe that if Trump wins, that life is going to get a lot easier for Russia. I think that's also now true waiting out the French parliamentary elections in just 3 weeks' time. So nobody believes the Russians are going to negotiate soon. The Ukrainians are not prepared to accept that they're going to lose territory. I believe that partition of Ukraine is inevitable. But in recent survey taken in Ukraine just a few days ago, well over 70% of Ukrainians believe that they will be able to take all of their land back. So politically, President Zelensky does not have the ability to say, okay, let's find a way to freeze the conflict, have a ceasefire, we're going to have to give up some land. I do think the Ukrainians are getting very, very tired of the fighting, and Zelensky is becoming less popular over time. So I think the Ukrainians are under more pressure to start negotiations than the Russians are, but we're still very, very far from that. Right now, we are in an escalatory environment, not a de-escalatory one.
What about India's potential role? I know India isn't involved or not supposed to be involved directly as far as the G7 talks on Ukraine are concerned. On the other hand, there's always been the sense that perhaps India, with its relationship with both Moscow and Kiev, might just have some sort of a say in ending this. Do you actually see that as being realistic? Do you think Prime Minister Modi has any chance at being a player towards ending this crisis?
He hasn't shown much interest. I mean, if you want to talk about countries that have relations with both, so far it's been the Turkish government that has been most useful in working with both the Russians and the Ukrainians, both in facilitating the Black Sea deal that allowed for food and fertilizer to get out of Ukraine and out of Russia, which of course helped the global south, including India, help to reduce inflation. That was a big deal. Also, we've seen prisoner exchanges facilitated by Turkey, by Saudi Arabia, by a few other countries. The Indians have not really played a significant role. What India has done, of course, is they've been a strong voice in the global south for Ukrainian sovereignty. They have been calling for an end to the fighting when it was possible that the Russians were thinking about using a tactical nuclear weapon in the early days of this war. Prime Minister Modi was directly involved in telling Putin what a disaster this would be for the world, and along with Xi Jinping in China, trying to pressure the Russians to stop with all of those nuclear threats. There's been some success there. At the end of the day, the Russians are continuing to flex their muscles. You may have noticed that there were nuclear exercises that the Russians took just a few weeks ago. This is a very dangerous environment, of course, because we're talking about an escalating proxy war between NATO and the world's largest nuclear power. India does not want to see that, but India, of course, also has very strong economic interests in continuing the trade with Russia. That includes an awful lot of oil that is being imported by India from Russia at a discount. That is aligned with U.S. policy. The Biden administration is not angry about that. But I could see an environment, if this war continues to get worse, where the Indians would be pressured for some of the economic engagement they're continuing to have with Russia.
The G7 started out as being an economic grouping over a period of time. They've ended up talking about just about anything. But I think the economic dynamics changing is quite significant and interesting. Again, if we are to talk about India for a moment, India is now, the world's fifth largest economy. As an economy, it's larger than the host Italy, France, and Canada as well. Do you believe that India being invited for the 11th time to G7 as an invitee also reflects India's greater or growing economic muscle on the world stage?
It's economic muscle, but of course it's not only that. It's also political and strategic alignment. India is not a part of Belt and Road. India's relations with China are very important economically. It's India's largest trade partner as of right now, but it is certainly not aligned strategically or militarily. And as India's relations with the U.S. and Japan continue to strengthen, as well as India tries to improve their relations with Europe and deepen that relationship to become more strategic, the interest of the G7 in aligning India, working closely with India, is only going to go up. Let's keep in mind that the G7 used to be the G7 plus one, and the plus one was Russia, not a large economy, but a country that the G7 hoped they'd be able to work
thrown
with
out in 2014,
over time.
Yes.
Yeah, that's gone. And if there was a plus one to the G7 right now, the country would be India. There's no question about that.
Ian, the other big issue, of course, is the Gaza-Israel war right now. There has been talk about a move towards a ceasefire. We've heard it all before. Sometimes it's worked, sometimes it's not. How do you expect this to come up in talks between all of these leaders?
It's only worked once and very briefly. And right now, the talks are not going well at all. Hamas has said no to the offer on the table. The Israeli prime minister privately, according to Biden, has said yes, but publicly has not. And, of course, the war cabinet has fallen apart with Benny Gantz, or Netanyahu's erstwhile opponent, resigning just a few days ago. So we're very far from a negotiated settlement, even a temporary six-week ceasefire at this point. Now, the big difference between the Russia question that you've been asking me about and the Middle East question is on Russia policy, the G7 is aligned. It's a multilateral policy. It's the G7, it's NATO, it's broader than that. Russia has made itself into a pariah state for the G7. There are coordinated economic, diplomatic, and security policies in trying to bring the Russians to heel on this war. When it comes to the Middle East, the United States is largely operating by itself. The U.S. has not been aligned with its allies on most of the key Security Council votes on the Middle East. The U.S. is providing an immense amount of defense support for Israel. The U.S. has decided to stop providing financial support for UNRWA on the ground. Humanitarian support for the Palestinians, America's allies, are continuing to do that. The U.S. is much more isolated and unilateralist in its policies on the Middle East, on Israel, on the Palestinians, than they are on Russia-Ukraine. And that is a very serious challenge for Biden internationally. It's a very serious challenge for Biden at home.
Ian, the relationship between Ottawa and New Delhi has plummeted, to new lows every few weeks now for the last while. And there are issues there which are unresolved. The reason I ask you about this is because Modi's over here, Trudeau's over here, and there has been speculation about a possible bilateral. Even if it's not a bilateral, a possible pull aside. Given where the relationship is between two strong democracies, how important is could this venue be for a breakthrough?
I hope it happens. In part, the relationship has gotten worse because before Indian elections, Modi was benefiting strongly inside India for taking a very hard line on Canada. You know, this idea that we'll go after terrorists no matter where they are, and we'll do it again if we have to. I mean, that was a foreign policy that not only was lauded inside the BJP, but you'll remember leadership from the Congress party supported Modi on this issue. So there was very little reason for him in an electoral cycle that, as we saw, he didn't perform so well in, very little reason for him to bring this to an end. Now, he's now concluded his election. He's back in government with a cabinet that he has pretty strong control over. There's no reason for him now not to reach out to Trudeau. And I'd like to see them have a bilateral here. I certainly think the Canadians would welcome it. Again, depending on what Modi's willing to say. But a stabilization of this relationship would be good for everybody in the G7 and would be good for India. Having said that, Canada is going to have elections in 2025. Trudeau's own party is about 20 points behind the Conservative Party in Canada right now. It is very likely that Pierre Poilievre, who is ideologically more in tune with Modi than Trudeau is likely to be the next Prime Minister of Canada. So we should be paying attention to that too, and I'm sure that Modi is.
All right. Ian Bremmer, wonderful speaking to you. Thank you so much for running us through G7, what all it potentially holds, and of course the India story here as well. Thank you very much indeed.
Have a great summit. Good to talk to you.
India and Italy have a very important strategic relationship, high-tech, defense, the economy. But there's also an old historic equation between the two countries. Remember, 50,000 Indian soldiers played a key part in the liberation of Italy during the Second World War from their fascist rulers. That's something that's not been forgotten in this part of the world. Indians also make a very strong pitch in the economy of Italy. The Parma ham and cheese industry, for example, has a huge, huge influence of Indians working over here. All that and a lot more are key aspects of what I discussed with India's ambassador to Rome. Well, I'm in the Puglia region of Italy, the southeast of Italy. In fact, not too far away from here is the site of the G7 meeting. It's here that several heads of state will be coming, including Prime Minister Modi, who flies in from New Delhi later on tonight. It's a very, very critical meeting, and it is in a country with which India has a long equation. We are delighted to have a very special guest with us. Ambassador Vani Rao is India's ambassador to Rome. Thank you, ma'am, very much for being with us. First up, the significance of G7 and why is it important that we have Prime Minister Modi attend?
Thank you, Vishnu, and glad to address viewers of NDTV. The G7 is an important platform because it has, as members, the most important and industrialized countries in the world and some of our key global partners. Mm-hmm. And for the Prime Minister, it's an occasion to reiterate the importance we attach to multilateralism. It's a platform on which he will espouse his vision of Vasudeva Kutumbakam and also follow up on some of the outcomes of the G20 summit that he had chaired last year. And obviously, we are also voicing the aspirations and expectations of the Global South on this platform.
And ma'am, that's interesting that you mentioned that because we are champions of the Global South. We've just had a very successful G20 some time back. And there is a huge expectation that India brings with us that voice to this platform. Could you tell us a little bit more about how India is recognized as that leader of the Global South?
So you will recall that in the G20 summit, we brought the focus back to some of the key global economic issues. And these range from food security to energy, the importance of sustainable development, and the need for developing countries to receive both technology and funds to meet some of the climate targets. So we will be voicing these expectations again on the global platform. In addition to that, India has also led some of the initiatives which seek to implement our approach to these global issues. You know, for example, the International Solar Alliance, the CDRI, and in the G20 summit, we had announced the Global Biofuels Alliance. So it would be, you know, not just voicing the aspirations of the Global South, but also to lead some of these efforts to implement some of the initiatives that would actually make a difference to the developing countries.
So Africa, the Asia-Pacific region, artificial intelligence and sustainability slash a green system of thinking and policy. That these are essential issues that we're also looking at, right?
Yes, correct. And the Italian presidency has also chosen to focus on some of these issues.
Right.
Prime Minister Meloni has increased her outreach with Africa in recent times. Mm-hmm. So you will see that Africa, artificial intelligence and energy will be on the agenda.
And ma'am, it's also an important occasion, isn't it, for India to have bilateral meetings. And of course, there'll be a bilateral with the Italian Prime Minister. But it's also a possible chance of bilaterals with other leaders as well.
That's right.
Is that something that we can look forward to?
Yes, definitely. The program is extremely compact, but it will give the Prime Minister an opportunity not only to participate in the G7 outreach session as a partner country, but also there are some important bilateral meetings in the program, and especially the meeting with Prime Minister Meloni is something that I am looking forward to.
We'll talk about that in a moment, but just one more question on G7. Ukraine is obviously a very key issue over here. The United States is possibly, President Biden may be coming out with some sort of a policy in terms of funding Ukraine. Be that as it may, is there a possibility of the advice of our Prime Minister being sought by international leaders? Because Ukraine is very much in conversation with this big peace summit a couple of days later in Switzerland.
Surely, in addition to some of the economic issues I mentioned, the current regional and global issues are on the agenda of the G7. And our positions on these issues are very well known. And the world leaders will surely engage with the Prime Minister on how we see, the way forward in addressing these issues. And because we have good relations with many of the affected parties, his views would be taken on board.
Yeah. And let's talk about Italy. Prime Minister Giorgio Meloni is somebody who India knows very well. She was there for G20. She was there on a state visit earlier on as well. How important is it that you have two leaders who work well with each other, drive this relationship?
It is a very important factor. You know, when the Prime Minister and his Italian counterpart have met three times already, and there is an excellent rapport. And when that happens, you know, it sends a signal to the two governments, to the industry and several other stakeholders that India attaches importance to Italy and vice versa.
Right.
And it is also, every meeting of the two prime ministers gives new boost and momentum to the ongoing bilateral cooperation. For example, the last two times they met, we elevated the relationship to a strategic partnership. So the top leaders engaging with each other, it also percolates down to the ministers having regular meetings, the institutionalized dialogue mechanisms, meeting more regularly, and basically trying to add depth to what we are doing across domains. So it is very important, and we are very excited to see what the two leaders will discuss tomorrow.
Ma'am, trade between India and Italy is higher now than it has been in the past. I mean, it's a real talking point, the economic relationship.
Yes.
And you've got several Indian companies which have invested in Italy in all sorts of sectors, IT to pharma to several other areas as well. So how is this an important part of your engagement?
So, you know, as an embassy, we pursue cooperation in all domains. And the trade and investment part of the bilateral agenda is very critical. This is an area where, you know, we want to broaden the interaction. We want to enable more manufacturing efforts by Italian companies in India. Mm-hmm. We want to enable investments in India, startups, divide entire range. You know, it will also help us get more inroads into the European market.
Right.
You know, Italian companies are very well known. They have highly industrialized companies, capabilities in automobiles, food processing, agriculture. So it's a win-win relationship. If the companies connect with each other, we will play the role of a facilitator.
Right. And ma'am, the strategic part of the relationship also implies a defense relationship at many levels. How is that something that's progressing?
So the defense cooperation is something that is poised to grow. You know, interestingly, the Indian personnel, military personnel, played a very key role here in the Second World War. You know, we had several thousands of them here, and you would be surprised to know that out of the 20 Victoria Crosses awarded to the Italian Army in the after the World War, six of them were to Indian soldiers.
Yes.
So there is a historical connection also between the two countries in the defense area. My mandate here, we are broadening the defense cooperation. Raksha Mantri came here last year. We are looking at an institutionalized dialogue between the two ministries of defense. And that will be a good platform to see how we engage in terms of service-to-service interaction, you know, the two armies, navies, air force, speaking to each other more often. Maritime cooperation is already there. We are very happy to see that the Italian government is focusing on the Indo-Pacific. They have, you know, they have a wider Mediterranean strategy.
Yeah.
And our Indo-Pacific and their wider Mediterranean, they intersect at the eastern shore of Africa, parts of Africa. So it is good for us. They are sending some of their naval ships to India to and the Indian Ocean region, in fact, as part of their increased presence in the Indian Ocean, Indo-Pacific region. Italian companies in the defense and security domain have excellent capabilities across the spectrum. But presently, the defense trade is mainly procurement-based on both sides. So that's something we are looking at, whether we can invest in more co-production ventures.
Sure.
We are trying to connect the industries on both sides.
You know, you've touched a chord because for me, the role of Indian soldiers in the Second World War is something which I've done a lot of work on. You know, I've had the opportunity of traveling the length and breadth of India, traveling to places like Monte Cassino and pulling out footage, which, you know, was there in our archives to put together the stories. And I think one of the most wonderful aspects of this is the respect that exists over generations for Indians in any number of war memorials and, you know, I mean, and plaques and busts in different parts. It's a wonderful part of the relationship people don't talk about or know about enough, I suspect.
Completely. It's something that we are also trying to highlight in our own interactions here.
Yeah.
When Raksha Mantri came here last year, he attended a ceremony where the local authorities set up a memorial for the Indian soldiers who had participated in the campaign there. So these connections are very important. Because you see, after all, a relationship is about building ties between the people.
Yeah.
And once you do that, you know, the my work becomes easy.
Sure.
You know, when and the Italians love India, Indian culture.
Sure.
So the more the stakeholders and the levels of connect between the two countries, I think the more sustainable it is in the long term.
One or two more questions, and again, something that's not spoken about enough, is that the Parma ham and cheese industry has an incredible India connect.
Yes.
Where you've got generations of people, primarily from the Punjab, coming in, who have are now so trusted and who are virtually members of the families which are involved in this, that they've got age-old, time-tested recipes which are now being shared with them so that they can actually, you know, make this one of the great Italian success stories.
Yes.
So Indian people or people of Indian origin doing wonderfully well in something which is completely Italian.
Yes.
Their cheese industry.
True. It is a their very unique aspect. Yeah. And the Indian diaspora from Punjab has really made a big contribution not only to the dairy industry but also to the agriculture sector.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, in many kiwi farms here, you will find many persons from Punjab working.
Right.
So it is an aspect of the relationship which is again very important and connects the two countries. Here we are also trying to diversify the profile of the Indian population.
Right.
You know, not many professionals are working here in Italy. We have students, but it is very small. The number is small, below 6,000-7,000.
So, but there are 2 lakh Indians.
There are 2 lakh Indians.
The second after what? The Netherlands, am I right?
Correct. Yeah.
In the European Union.
Correct. Yeah. So most of them are in the agriculture and dairy sector.
Right.
So last year we agreed to facilitate migration and mobility of some more categories of people, which I'm sure is going to be mutually beneficial.
Sure.
For us.
And ma'am, one final question. There was this rather unfortunate situation which happened in Brindisi where there was a bust, I believe, under construction of Gandhiji, which was defaced. Is there a threat of Khalistani separatism in Italy? I don't know if the word threat is right, but is there this widespread sentiment over here among some people of this? Because that represents a huge challenge, obviously, for us.
Yes. So, you know, the Indian population here is very well settled and integrated. And overall, they've made a very positive contribution to this country. You mentioned, you know, how well they have done in the dairy sector.
Yeah.
But, you know, as it happens everywhere, there are some elements which are misguided and which are susceptible to propaganda and, you know, narratives which are very misguided.
Right.
So this incident took place, but I must say the local authorities immediately acted. We've also requested them to take prompt action against those, you know, who did this act. Again, it brings me to one more historical fact. You know, the Brindisi was chosen as a location because Mahatma Gandhi transited through Brindisi in 1931.
I see.
Yeah, when he participated in the round table conference in Switzerland, he came to Brindisi and he boarded a steamer from there to Mumbai.
Oh.
So that's why, you know, the bust is, you know, being installed there.
Right.
It's not yet ready, but whenever, you know, we are, we will have it unveiled.
Wonderful speaking to you, ma'am. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you so much, Vishnu. Thank you.
Well, there you have it. India's ambassador to Rome telling us about the relationship, the G7 process as well. It's an important developing strategic relationship across so many facets, but perhaps that human connect is what underlines or plays is the bedrock, I would suggest, of what it's all about. Well, we're completely out of time on this very special broadcast from Bari in Italy. Tomorrow is going to be an absolutely key day as far as India is concerned here in the G7 process. With camera person Rakesh Singh, Vishnu Shom for NDTV.